I waited patiently for the Lord, and he inclined unto me, and heard my cry. He brought me up also out of an horrible pit, out of the miry clay, and set my feet upon a rock, and established my goings.
When in the beginning I tried really hard to make them happy, do what they wanted me to do so I wouldn't get hit, but I soon realized that no matter what I did, they were going to find a reason to hit me anyway. And I mean, I was eventually at a point where I was being hit several times a day. And so I just decided it didn't matter what I did, I was going to get hit anyway. So one day during school, I started shooting rubber bands at one of Ron Williams' sons. Eventually, they came in and they took me out of the schoolroom. They stuck me in a corner and pretty much were talking to me about my evil heart and how rebellious I was. And I told them that if they didn't let me go home, I was going to sing rock music until they did. And so I started singing a rock song, the first one that came to my head. I Love Rock and Roll by Joan. I think her name was Joan Jett. They put a speaker near me, and they were blasting gospel music. So I was kind of like, I was trying to compete with the speaker. So I got to a point where I was kind of scream singing because I was trying to be louder than the speaker. Eventually, Ron Williams came, and he said, follow me. We went back to the house. I was scared. I was like, oh, here we go. I'm going to get hit for this. And I didn't. They had my suitcases packed, and I was going home. They sent me home on a plane.
The most traumatic thing that I saw at Hepzibah House was a girl who showed up about a year after I was there, maybe a year and a half. This girl was a pretty girl and sweet. I think she was a little bit younger than me. And for some reason, she was singled out. It happened once in a while. But this girl in particular was beaten at least once a day, but really severely, sometimes 2-3 times in a day. I believe that her crime was that she chewed her fingernails. And they would look at her fingernails in the morning and say, you chewed them at night, and paddle her. And then 6 hours later, they would inspect them again and just announce that she had chewed her nails again. And I always wondered how on earth they could tell in that short amount of time. How could she show growth on her fingernails? They just kept beating her and beating her. And eventually, we started seeing signs that something was wrong. She would be called out into the bathroom with staff alone. Pretty soon, I started seeing, once walked by through the crack of the door, I could see her bent over a counter, and Miss Saylor was dressing her bottom. It just kept getting worse and worse. It seems like this went on for at least 2 weeks. At one point, she stood up from chapel and threw her thick, double-knit polyester dress, threw her slip, threw all the bandages on her bottom and her underwear. She had oozed onto the metal chair, blood and pus. So at this point, when I went to clean that bathroom after I'd seen that Miss Saylor had been in there with her, I saw the bandage and I opened it up. And it was blood and pus, quite substantial, covering this large bandage. I would say that her wound had to cover most of her bottom. Amy was gaunt. She'd lost so much weight. They were making her skip meals all the time. At this point, she was very isolated from us. We saw her very little of the day because she was just, seemed like she was just being punished constantly. I remember making eye contact with me one time, and I felt like I needed to save her. I felt like I needed to do something to help Amy, and I didn't know what to do. And I looked away. And then she ran away a couple days later. And she got away, apparently. But I thought maybe they'd killed her. They were all running around. They made us sit at the table and put our heads down. I knew something big had happened, and I thought, oh my goodness, they've killed Amy.
This Amy is not the same Amy that we discussed in the previous episode. This is Amy Kay, and she escaped from Hepzibah House, and this is her story. I was there in 1981 for about 10 months. I weighed about 135 pounds when I went in, and the last time I was weighed there, I was 117 pounds. I was regularly menstruating before going there. I did not menstruate at all after I was there. I can still see the fenced-in yard. The fence was so high, you could only see the sky above it. I knew there was a world out there, but I couldn't see it. I was beaten every day until I played their game. Daily beatings for me continued for about 4 to 5 months. It was so bad that my underwear stuck to my skin. I had two large open sores from the beatings. The staff said it was my fault, that I shouldn't have done whatever it was and gotten into trouble. One day, I was told to help another girl clean the room between the back door of the house and the garage. I went to the garage to look for boxes, and then, when I turned back to the house, I noticed all of the blinds on that side of the house were closed. Then I saw that no one was on the street. I was all alone, out of sight. This was my chance. I had to try. So I ran like my shirt tails were on fire, off the grounds and down the street. I don't know how long or how far I ran, but I ran until I thought my chest would explode. I hid in an open basement until dark. Then, after dark, I walked on streets I didn't know, not even knowing if I was going in the right direction. I walked down a highway until I saw a light on in a garage. I asked the people in that house if I could use their phone to call my father. As it turned out, he had already been called by Hepzibah House. The people gave me food and took me to the police department. But when I walked in, I saw some of the staff from Hepzibah House, and I was ready to run again. I told the police about the abuse that went on there. I showed a woman officer the scars, but the police did nothing. The Hepzibah House staff agreed to take me to a meeting place the next day where my father would get me. I was promised nothing would happen if I spent the night at the main house. Nothing did. The next day I went home. I filed child abuse charges against Hepzibah House. I was told that Hepzibah House had closed and the girls were sent home. But that was a lie.
I shall not die, but live, and declare the works of the Lord. The Lord hath chastened me sore, but he hath not given me over unto death.
The women of Hepzibah House were silenced and forced to misrepresent their circumstances, and so in this last episode of the documentary, they are asked to give their opinions freely about what they went through, as well as their conclusions about God. I do not agree with everything they say, but I think they have a right to say it. And I think Christian fundamentalists and evangelicals who continue to ignore and remain indifferent to places like Hepzibah House have a duty to listen to them with respect and humility. Bear in mind, these women all started out as Bible-believing Christian girls.
He did a good job of getting it in our head and confusing all of us, but he didn't convert anybody.
It was the hardest time of my life coming out of Hepzibah House. I think it was harder than being at Hepzibah House. I ended up in an abusive relationship for 3 years. I ended up walking away from God. I still prayed to him. I did my devotions almost daily, but I ended up in a place that I didn't believe a Christian should be in. But I also didn't know how to live like a Christian and not live as Hepzibah House was.
I go to church. I'm a member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So, I mean, I am still a Christian. I believe in God. I mean, as far as my spiritual growth, my church attendance, that kind of thing, my commitment to my faith has always been kind of off and on. Like, I'll go for years going to church and doing everything I know I should be doing, and then I'll stop for a while, and I'll go for months, sometimes a year, without going to church.
I believe in God, and I believe that Jesus died for our sins, and I believe he did die for everybody. But I just don't think that that is the only way. Somebody over there that goes to that church that is just as sincere in what they believe, I don't understand how me and my church is going to be in judgment of that person because they believe something different than me. I just don't believe that. I mean, I think it's the same God for everybody, but I just think there just might be like different ways, you know, to get there. And people that are living in someplace else that just don't, they've never heard somebody come and say these words, Jesus Christ, but they look up and they think, man, this is a great look at these stars. This place is great. You know, in their head or subconsciously, they think, you know, somebody great created all this. Like, that's a faith to me.
I do not believe that there is somebody playing chess with my life, that there is some all-controlling force manipulating my world. I do not believe that. I do believe in divine energy, and I believe that we are the living breath of that divine energy. I am not Christian. I'm not Muslim. I'm not Hindu. I'm not Buddhist. I'm not religious. I have no religious affiliation whatsoever.
I believe that God is a God of love. I believe that God does not tolerate sin, but he's also not the tyrannical God that Ron Williams and Hephzibah House portrayed to us.
I believe that God is actually a forgiving God, and I do not attend church now. I don't feel that I need to go to church because they teach us that God is everywhere. So I don't need to go to church to be with God. I can take a walk in the woods and be with God. And I would actually rather, because too many people are hypocritical. They hide behind God and they do whatever they want to do in the name of religion. And I have absolutely no trust in those people now. I don't believe them, even though they may say that they're wanting to do good and do right. You don't always know that they are.
Do I believe that Ron Williams and Patty Williams are wrong for what they are doing to little girls right now? Yes, I do. Do I believe that they should be shut down? Yes, I do. Do I believe that they should be held legally and morally and socially responsible for the damage that they have done and are doing? Yes, I do. Do I need anything from them to make myself feel better? No, I don't.
Pastor Williams, he says that he's doing all these good things for girls and making their lives better. I don't believe he made my life better at all. I think he damaged my life.
We're not here to judge each other, to compare notes about who's got the best lifestyle or who's made the best choices. We need to come together and commonly, unconditionally love and support each other in our healing.
My belief in God has changed dramatically since Hephzibah House. I used to believe that God was a cruel dictator who gave us impossible tasks and then took pleasure in punishing us when we faltered.
I truly think that the Lord allowed me to go through my Hephzibah House experience so that I could help other girls who have been scarred even worse.
I now believe that God is a father who, just like with my own children, when they stumble and fall, he grieves and he helps and he guides. The ability to be whole again, I believe, can only be found in Christ.
I know how long it took me, and if we can help girls to talk about it when they've been only out of there for 5 years instead of waiting 20 years, like, that's like a key thing.
Diana Emery left Hephzibah House and now lives in Carmel, Indiana. Jenny Hoke left Hephzibah House and now lives in Hemet, California, and is married. Sharon Saylor left Hephzibah House for Lancaster, Pennsylvania. The Lambs of Hepzibah House is produced by Jerry Massey.